As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
What follows may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
The world is full of stories. Stories of mysteries. Of curiosities. Of oddities. Join Kat and Jethro Gilligan Toth for the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected, as they lift the lid and cautiously peer inside the box of oddities.
Well, here we are, fresh back from New York City.
I wouldn't say fresh.
Well, no, it's fresh is probably. Well, recently we've returned smelling like airplane.
Yep.
From New York City, the show at Caveat in the Lower East Side of Manhattan was just an amazing experience.
Oh my gosh, we had such a great time. And we thank you so much, New York, for having us and for being so welcoming and for your delicious, delicious bagels.
And Kat saw a rat, which her first New York rat.
Oh my gosh, I loved him so much. And he seemed to like me, like he was hanging out.
We were down in the Seaport District. We stayed at a hotel close to the water and we went down to walk along the pathways there. And a rat scootled out from the bushes and Kat lost her mind. He ran under like a bench and Kat spent about, I'd say 7-8 minutes trying to coax him out with a granola bar. And he's a city rat. He doesn't respond to that.
He wanted the granola bar. But he scootled into the brush then and we hung out for a bit to see if he'd come out. And he did. He came right to the edge of the brush and was like, hi, I see you. Welcome to New York. And I was like, whoa, I love you.
Looking forward to going back and doing another show in New York.
I don't think the people of New York look forward to me coming back, though, because I got some looks.
Yeah, they're not as fond of the rats.
No.
as you are. Well, I got one for you. With DNA technology becoming more and more sophisticated, we've been able to trace our ancestry back further and further into time.
You're talking about DNA again? Wow. You're on a DNA kick.
The topic I did at the live show in New York involved DNA, but most people weren't there for that.
Well, the woolly mammoth thing was also DNA.
Yeah, but that was like many, many episodes ago.
It was like two or three. Okay. Am I getting high-pitched because I don't know what I'm talking about? Was it further back than I remember? I don't know. Everything's blending together.
It was several episodes ago.
No, I'm sure you're right.
All right. So anyway, and now we've just taken a giant step forward and have traced the DNA of a person living in the United States, in the Americas, back further than we've ever been able to do before.
Oh, wow.
Daryl Dusty Crawford.
Is he from the South?
No, he's from Montana. He's a Native American man who has had his DNA traced back 55 generations with a 99% accuracy.
Wow.
Which means they have traced Mr. Crawford's DNA in an unbroken chain back 17,000 years.
That math confuses me.
The company responsible for the for this is the ancestry company CRI Genetics.
Okay.
So Mr. Crawford said that when he was in school, he was always taught that his ancestors, the Blackfoot Native Americans, had used the Bering Bridge, the Bering Land Bridge, Bering Straits Land Bridge, to reach America during the Ice Age. And mm-hmm. that's kind of what we learned, too, is that the population immigrated from what is now Siberia and Russia.
Asia.
Across the land bridge, the Bering land bridge, when the oceans were at a much lower level than they are today. But the testing results of the DNA that came back had some pretty big surprises.
Yeah?
What we've learned is that Crawford's ancestors are, in fact, from the South Pacific Islands.
Oh, wow.
They did not enter over the Bering Straits land bridge. So it appears as though his ancestors migrated across the Pacific, presumably hopping from one island to another, until they reached the coast of South America. And from there, they traveled by land into what is now North America, up along the coast.
Wow.
This is what the data suggests. And again, CRI Genetics says the testing is about 99% accurate. So this throws a whole new wrinkle into how we thought the migratory patterns of people had developed in ancient times.
Well, is it possible that he was, like, his family is kind of a one-off? Is that possible at all? Or is it pretty much understood that, no, this the Blackfoot tribe came from South Pacific now?
Well, not exactly a one-off, but we'll learn about that in a second.
Okay.
So the discovery, being able to trace it back 17,000 years, is so incredibly rare that the company told Crawford and his family that this event was, quote, like finding Bigfoot.
Oh, wow.
They've never been able to trace anybody's ancestry in the Americas back as far as they have traced Dusty Crawford's. This is according to the Great Falls Tribune. They used a very specific process when testing the DNA, focusing on mitochondrial DNA. This means that they were able to trace Crawford's line of female ancestors, which is the most reliable form that we know of until recently. Crawford is part of the mitochondrial DNA haplogroup B2. That means this particular group is seen very rarely in Alaska and Canada. And if Mr. Crawford's ancestors headed across the Bering Straits bridge, the Bering Straits land bridge, to get to the Americas, that's certainly, he would be in that group. Mm-hmm. But they've determined that the mitochondrial DNA haplogroup B2 originated in Arizona. 17,000 years ago.
Oh, wow.
At least as far as North America goes.
Okay.
There doesn't seem to be any path from the Americas, them exiting. And it's a bit of a mystery because there are no indications of the haplogroup B2 in Alaska and Canada. As I mentioned, there are four major Native American groups that are found in North America. Each group is traced back to one female ancestor.
Oh.
And the four different groups they call Ina, Chi, I, Sachi. Mr. Crawford is a descendant of Ina. Now, her name is directly connected to a mythological priestess from Polynesia named Ina. She was considered to be representative of the first woman, according to lore, the first woman in this group. And in fact, in the Cook Islands, on their $20 bill, she's depicted, there's a picture of her riding on a shark.
That's rad.
It is. That's badass. Crawford's DNA is closest related outside the Americas to a group in Southeast Asia.
Asia.
The Blackfoot Confederacy. Now, that's an historic collective name for those four different bands that I mentioned before that do make up the Blackfoot people. Three First Native groups in Canada, in the Canadian provinces of Alberta, Saskatchewan, and British Columbia, make up the first three, and then there is one federally recognized tribe in Montana, and this is where Mr. Crawford comes from. Today, however, the Ina Native American line is only found in the Americas. It's strongly represented on the east coast of North America, according to CRI Genetics. So it's quite an interesting story. It appears as though people that fall into this group, because they've been able to trace it back this far through Mr. Crawford, came from the Polynesian Islands, migrating by sea to the west coast of South America, and then migrating up the coast into the Americas. And most of them today, or the biggest representation of that group today, is located on the east coast of North America.
Interesting.
According to Live Science, 83% of Crawford's DNA is a match with Native Americans. specifically this group. The remaining amount, about 10% European, 5% East Asian, and 2% South Asian, less than 1% African. Now, with the explosion of inexpensive and effective genetic testing, our scientific understanding has been reshaping exactly how we think of the Native Americans migrating to the Americas, what route they took, and how they got there. There's other research that suggests that humans reached North America as early as 40,000 years ago. In January of 2017...
That was only like 4 years ago.
In Alaska, archaeologists found the jawbone of a horse that had the markings of it from what looks like to be stone tools. The animal obviously had been hunted by humans. It's amazing that we've been able to trace this man's mitochondrial DNA back 55 generations to 17,000 years ago. It makes it the oldest human DNA discovery in the Americas, but not the oldest in the world. In 1994, in northern Spain, archaeologists discovered fossilized remains of an archaic group of humans. They had never seen anything like this. These bones had been fractured and had marks on them as well, too. They appeared to have been cannibalized.
Ooh.
They dated back these six particular individuals to at least 800,000 years ago.
What?
800,000-year-old cannibals. And even though these weren't modern Homo sapiens, they shared many similarities with us. They also showed many similar characteristics to Neanderthals as well. But they were different just enough so that they did not fit into the category of any known species.
Oh.
They named them Homo antecessor. And they're the oldest Homo fossils ever found in Europe. And speculation by some in academia is that they may have been the elusive common ancestor, the missing link between...
Oh, yeah.
They've studied H. antecessor's DNA, which is the single oldest sample of human genetic material ever analyzed. And it suggests that it is not the missing link. It is a completely separate Homo species. Researchers sequenced the ancient proteins in the enamel of that 800,000-year-old tooth. They used proteins to decipher the portion of genetic code that eluded them. Then they took the code and compared it to the data from modern human tooth samples. This is how they determined that it didn't quite fit into the three previously mentioned species. They concluded it was probably a sister species of a shared ancestor that led to modern humans and our other extinct cousins.
Wow.
So even though these remains aren't modern humans as we know it, they were human, which makes them the oldest human DNA ever sequenced. The approach of studying ancient proteins opens up an entire window into our genetic past in many ways that DNA analysis cannot, because DNA tends to degrade relatively quickly. After several hundred thousands of years, it can become unreadable.
Right.
At this point, the oldest straight DNA analysis of a human that's ever been sequenced is 430 years old. Proteins survive much longer in fossils. They have used similar protein sequencing methods to study the genetic codes of a 1.77 million-year-old rhino.
What?
Yeah, they sequenced it. And a 1.9 million-year-old extinct ape in China.
Asia.
So who knows how far back we'll be able to trace our ancestry in the near future. 17,000 years is pretty amazing, but with protein sequencing, we're on the threshold of going much, much, much further into the past.
That's really amazing. And so that's what you were saying, that mitochondrial DNA was the best way that we could genetically test until now.
Yes, and now the combination of DNA testing as well as protein sequencing, really, it looks like the sky's the limit. And when I say that, it means that DNA and protein will prove that we came from aliens.
Oh, I knew it. I knew that's where you were going with that. As soon as you were like, oh, it looks like they didn't use the Bering Straits land bridge, I was like, yep, I know that's where he's going. He's going to say aliens.
I tried to hold back as long as I could.
Well, you did great.
And now, that thing in the middle. Judith Love Cohen
was an employee at NASA in the 1960s. She was responsible for helping to create the abort guidance system, which rescued the Apollo 13 astronauts. That day, as she was working on the problem, she went into labor. So she took a printout of the problem she was working on and went to the hospital. She called her boss and said she had finished the problem and then gave birth to actor and comedian Jack Black.
Did you know, on this date in 1863, not a damned thing happened? This is The Box of Oddities.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. You know, as your kids get older, there are some things about parenting that gets easier. I remember once hearing my sister tell my little niece, "If you put your pants on, I'll give you some Fresca."
And when kids can start to reason that they get something if they do something right, it's a lot easier to manage them.
Having that conversation about money with your kids, that's not the easiest thing in the world. Fact is, kids won't really know how to manage their money until they're actually in charge of it. And that's where Greenlight can help.
Greenlight is a debit card and money app made just for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on the kids' spending and savings, while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills.
Your kids will learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely thanks to the games that teach kids skills in a fun, accessible way.
When I was a kid, I had expected chores, and then I had bonus chores. And bonus chores were where I earned money. And so if you're thinking like, hey, my kids should be doing stuff around the house, yeah, no, you're not wrong. But maybe there's extra ways that they can learn how to be a successful financial money person.
What was one of the bonus chores that you had to do?
Rub my mom's feet.
And what did that pay?
I don't know, like a quarter or something.
Millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate their life together.
Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/oddities. That's greenlight.com/oddities to try Greenlight for free.
Greenlight.com/oddities.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. On our show, we help listeners like you make the most of your finances. I sit down with NerdWallet's team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. We answer your real-world money questions and break down the latest personal finance news. The nerds will give you the clarity you need by cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. We don't promote get-rich-quick schemes or hype unrealistic side hustles. Instead, we offer practical knowledge that you can apply in your everyday life. You'll learn about strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. And you'll walk away with the confidence you need to ensure that your money is always working as hard as you are. So turn to the nerds to answer your real-world money questions and get insights that can help you make the smartest financial decisions for your life. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Support for the Box of Oddities is provided in part by listeners like you on Patreon. You can support us too. Go to patreon.com/boxofoddities. Thank you. The Box of Oddities with Kat and Jethro Gilligan Toth.
Brian sent us an email. He said, "Kat and Jethro, can't remember the box number for this, but it was about the two vehicles that were found in Foss Lake that went missing in the 1970s in northwest Oklahoma."
I remember that one. That was one of yours.
Yeah, way, way back. He says, "My family lives in that area, and when I was in school, we frequented the lake and even camped out there very close to the area where the vehicles were pulled from. My siblings and I have swam and even fished right there where the two vehicles were discovered. And it kind of makes me think, Did I eat a fish that might have nibbled off of one of these missing people?
Oh my God. Yes, most definitely.
Probably you did.
Yeah.
Anyway, absolutely love the podcast. And thanks to Dan and Lindsay Cummings from Scared to Death for sending me your way. Signed, Brian. Thanks, Brian.
Yay. That's creepy, Brian.
So what do you have for me this day, my love?
I also have a science-y kind of thing going on today. I wonder if we are getting to the point where we should start sharing our stories with each other, because we've had some really close overlapping topic things lately, and it's getting creepy.
I consider that an internal boo effect.
All right. Microevolution is simply a change in gene frequency within population. So evolution at this scale can be observed over short periods of time, like the change that might come about because natural selection favored the gene, or because the population received new immigrants carrying the gene, or because some non-resistant genes mutated to the resistant version. An example of microevolution would be a resilience to pesticides from one generation of insects to another, as opposed to macroevolution, which would be like dinosaurs evolving into birds.
Okay, all right.
But when we think of evolution, we tend to think of the latter. But microevolution is happening right in front of us. Scientists in Australia have discovered several changes in humans, which are appearing over a short period of time.
Really?
In fact, according to a new study in the Journal of Anatomy, the human race is evolving at a rate faster than it has done at any interval in the last 250 years.
Is that because of technology, do you think?
It's because of a few things, and we're going to get to that.
Okay.
Humans are increasingly being born without wisdom teeth.
Okay. All right, yeah, that makes... Okay, sure.
Yeah.
What about appendixes? I would imagine they're probably...
That's not noted in this study.
Okay, because that's what's left of a second stomach that we used to have. I could have used that in New York, the amount of food we ate.
Oh my gosh, I know. But that kale and Brussels sprout salad that I had at Industry Kitchen, worth it. I would have two stomachs for that salad. Anyway... Dr. Tegan Lucas, a professor at the College of Medicine and Public Health at Flinders University in Australia, along with University of Adelaide professors Maciej Henberg and Jalia Kumaradalake, found that as human faces have gotten shorter, our mouths have consequently become smaller. Thus, there's less room for wisdom teeth.
That's fascinating.
But it's not just that we don't need the room for them. It's partially because we don't have the need for them. As we've learned to use fire and process foods more, a lot of people are just being born without wisdom teeth because, you know, we eat closer to the front of our faces.
Yeah. In my case, I was only born with two, not four.
Look at you. You're part of microevolution.
You're welcome. I'm pioneering. I'm blazing a trail. Not as big a trail as you blazed after that kale salad, though.
Oh, I see what you did there. Yeah. That's unkind, what you just did.
Was it unkind?
It was, listen, my stomach was doing some things, yes.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But I got a lot of vitamin A and antioxidants, mm-hmm. and it's important.
Yeah, I agree.
And I'm sorry that mid-evening that involved into some unpleasantness for you and everyone sharing the room with me.
It was a little unpleasant, yes.
All right, that's enough.
I still love you though, Stinky.
Babies are being born with extra bones in their feet and legs.
Shut up!
As well as an increase in a rare artery in their arm. So this artery forms while the fetus is in the womb and the main vessel that supplies blood to the forearm and hand, but it disappears during gestation and is replaced by the radial and ulnar arteries. But since the 18th century, anatomists have been studying the prevalence of this artery in adults, and the study shows that it's clearly increasing.
What is the use of that?
Don't know.
Huh.
But not everything has to be for its use. It could just be because of where we're coming from. It doesn't have to be about where we're supposed to be going. Get what I mean?
That's very deep.
I'm sure if you think enough about it, it is. Yes. Lucas said the prevalence was around 10% in people born in the mid-1880s, compared to 30% in those born in the late 20th century. So that's a pretty significant increase in a fairly short period of time when it comes to evolution. And if this trend continues, Lucas said that a majority of people will have a forearm median artery by the year 2100.
Oh, wow. So that is fast.
Dr. Lucas says that humans are currently in a relaxed state of natural selection, which you can kind of figure out what that means, right? I mean, it makes sense. Our environment is favorable to us. We've created a life by way of our technology and so on and so forth that makes life pretty simple.
Mm-hmm.
And natural selection no longer removes certain outliers because it doesn't need to. Back in the day, natural selection had to remove, you know, the outliers as far as strength or intelligence.
Sure.
And now it really, it's like, well, you know, you breed anyway, so I guess.
Off we go.
So the outliers in the gene pool are still making it back in.
Is this, in a sense, de-evolution?
No. Because evolution doesn't have to mean like this idea of this ultimate thing, you know, and I think a lot of people feel like humans evolved, done, like humans evolved,
right.
Period, done.
Right.
But it's constantly happening.
Of course.
But we're not evolving toward this ultimate human. Mm. You know, there's not this apex human that we're moving toward, which I think a lot of times we think is what's happening, or we have this vision that we, you know, are or are becoming. It's just change. It doesn't have to get better. It just is change.
But if it gets worse, then ultimately it dies off and is eliminated from the evolutionary process.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you're right. I think that we tend to look at it like in this overarching view from when single cells evolved to where we are today.
Right.
So we look at us where we are as the apex, and we are at this point.
Currently.
But it doesn't necessarily mean that's going to continue to be the case.
Right. We're not necessarily the goal, you know?
we're the most evolved we've ever been. But that doesn't mean
allegedly,
much.
Right?
Yes, that's true. This particular cycle of humanity and civilization, we're the furthest along that we have been, but probably not as technologically advanced as our Atlantean ancestors were.
Right. A good example of this natural selection that's not really relevant anymore is infertile individuals. So natural selection would dictate that they don't have the opportunity to pass on their genes, but because of our big, fat, amazing brains, we were like, nope, we're going to breed anyway. And now they can reproduce.
That's incredible. I didn't even think about that. And with technology advancing to the point where cloning is clearly
right.
a possibility and is a fact in a lot of cases, maybe not human beings yet that we know of. But that takes that whole element of it right out of the evolutionary table, doesn't it?
Yeah. And quick question regarding clones. Will they be able to breed or will it be like, you know,
Will they be sterile?
Right.
Yeah.
And in that case, will clones breeding with humans interfere or change the way that we evolve in any way? What's that mean?
Maybe we already are clones.
And we just don't know it?
Yeah.
It's the Matrix?
It's the aliens.
Oh, it's the aliens. Anyway, thanks, Joe, so much for this topic. This was so interesting, and I'm so glad that you shared it because I loved reading about this, and I can't wait to read more and see where we're going. What is our apex?
What a fantastic topic. And speaking of sharing, we have some news we want to share with you.
Oh, my God.
Sleeping at my feet right now is Haggis. And curled up right next to him in the same little tiny bed that they don't fit in is the newest member of our family, Howard Moon. We named him Howard Moon. He's like a Basenji mix. He's cute as you know what.
I think that's the first time you've ever censored yourself on this show.
I don't want to offend his ears.
Okay. We have ordered a DNA test, so we're so excited for that to arrive because it's like Christmas.
It really is. I'm wondering, though, if we're going to be able to trace him back 17,000 years.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Well, I'm pretty sure he came from Asia. Just kidding. It's Africa, probably.
Thanks for hanging out with us again, friends. We appreciate you guys so much. And now that the New York show is behind us, we're going to start looking at booking a full tour, hopefully sometime in the upcoming year, maybe the first part of the year. We haven't really worked it all out yet, but that is what our dream is.
We're currently accepting suggestions for 2022 tour names.
We look forward to seeing you next time.
Until then, keep flying that freak flag.
And fly it proudly, you beautiful freak.
And so, let it be known that the Box of Oddities belongs to you, and its fate is in your hands. Therefore, it's been requested by those to whom I report to beseech you for assistance. We ask but one thing of you, to provide a 5-star rating and a positive review. True, that is two things. However, 'tis merely a 5-star rating and a positive review. Also, subscribe to us. Okay, so three things is all we ask. Three things and three things only. Henceforth, the Box of Oddities commits to the telling of stories. Stories of the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected. We wish to offer our deeply felt gratitude and appreciation for your patronage. TheBoxOfOddities.com. Copyright 2021. All rights reserved.
If you like this podcast, can we recommend another one? It's called Big Picture Science. You can hear it wherever you get your podcasts, and its name tells part of the story. The big picture questions and the most interesting research in science.
Seth and I are the hosts. Seth is a scientist. I am Molly, and I'm a science journalist. And we talk to people smarter than us, and we have fun along the way. The show is called Big Picture Science, and as Seth said, you can hear it wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Neil.
And I'm Ken.
And we are from the Triviality Podcast, a pub trivia-style game show where a lack of seriousness meets a little bit of knowledge.
Join us each week for an hour-long game of general knowledge trivia featuring special guests from around the world, plus tons of extra themed episodes.
If you want to improve your trivia game,
or you just want to scream at us in your car when we get easy questions wrong,
then we're the show for you. Find Triviality on all your favorite podcast apps.
But you know that because you're already listening to a podcast.